Joe? Right on. Good morning, y'all. Thanks. Joe's been blowing the shofar at Ancient of Days for 3 years now. It's definitely a tradition. So coffee's not kicking in. I hope that woke you up. But no, it was a surprise. Thanks, actually, just for being here this early. This is Ancient of Days, the third one, Ancient of Days 2005, UFOs and Bible Prophecy Conference. I'm not normally up this time of morning, so thanks to those of you who actually, especially if you drove in last night. Mike Heiser got in about 2 hours ago. We'll see him shortly. And I'm guessing there's going to be a few in the room and throughout the day not quite sure what you've gotten yourself into by being here. So the only reason that I'm the first speaker is I've got to catch a few people up on the probably very dubious topic of biblical ufology to date. Because UFOs in the Bible, it's a pretty specialized field of study already. And it's a niche market, you could say for sure. But that field is going to be narrowed significantly, I think, just by tweaking it to focus on Bible prophecy. And once you've studied this from a biblical perspective, though, and you see that the Bible does indeed have coherent answers related to the UFO and abduction phenomena, it begins to raise some questions about where it's all going. I think a lot of you are familiar with those questions in your own mind. And we all realize, you'd say, that the masses aren't particularly interested in these specific topics yet. But I hope you know you're a little bit crazy even for being interested in it yourself right now at this point in time. At least you're ahead of your time, if I wanted to be nice about it. But honestly, if what any of us believe about this stuff is even close to being true, I think close to the whole world is going to be asking the same questions that brought you here soon enough. I believe, probably quite a few of you do, that there's probably more than one major event on the horizon that's going to create that interest globally. And what we've done here, the purpose of the conference is to bring together the very few people who have actually studied UFOs and the Bible from an orthodox and defendable position to have some well-studied answers, or at least some possibilities available to the world when that time does come. Because whether you look at UFOs and future events in terms like Art Bell's The Quickening or Stephen Bassett's Stephen Greer's Disclosure event, or whether you consider it all the Grand Delusion, what I think a lot of people fail to realize on this topic about the UFO phenomena is that sooner or later it's going to all come down to choosing sides. And if that's true, it's important that I think the best information is available just to help people in making their certain ultimate choices about life, the universe, and everything. But I think most of you in this room now, you're well beyond asking, are UFOs real or do they exist? That puts you ahead of the curve compared to most people, normal people, as long as normal means believing everything the government and the press tells us about things. But your questions, you've gotten into things more like, well, why are they here? And how is all this likely to play out? So like I said, this is definitely a tiny, tiny niche market. So we're going to go where most UFO conferences never go to even hopefully begin to answer those questions. There's a few that were here when we did this last year. We went where no UFO conference has gone before. Some of you were here, but we brought together both secular researchers and big-name ufologists together with Christian theologians. Some aren't exactly UFO enthusiasts, but we all presented each other's information. We all heard each other out, and then we had a panel discussion afterwards. And that went on for 4 days. It was truly historic. We all know there's a little bit of animosity between most of the church and most of the UFO community. But at least I realized, and if you were here, you saw it, we kind of struck at the center of that and built some bridges, obviously. But who was here? I can recognize at least half of you. Hey, raise your hand. Okay, good. I might as well tell you this year, it's just kind of a running joke. This year's isn't as good, but it's hard to duplicate that kind of success, honestly, from what we brought together. Because this year's topics are a little more speculative. Last year's talks, they were extremely important just in understanding the evidence for and the reality of the UFO and abduction phenomena, but whatever you think's behind it all. And we also presented a lot of fascinating theology, too, that once it's digested, it gets people thinking along the lines of what we're covering today. And that's why the theology DVD was sent to everyone who pre-registered. And if you haven't seen that stuff already, your head's likely to explode maybe by the end of David Flynn's talk today. If you're not familiar with these speakers or these topics, there's a couple people nodding already because you've seen David Flynn's talk from last year already, and people's heads might explode later on once they see it. See, if you're laughing, you know what I'm talking about. But getting down to business, just like I said, my job is to catch you up just a bit. And if you see my presentations last year, you know that I usually just kind of focus on teaching and just kind of spitting out the information, but without really getting personal or sharing the motivation, or you might say even the passion behind what I do. But that's where I'm going to start today, and I'll stay there for a while, too, just so you know how I got into all this, what motivates me to run the websites I do, to travel and to hold UFO conferences, things like that. So personally speaking, I got active in this field in 1997, somewhat after the Heaven's Gate cult suicide in California occurred. And anybody that doesn't remember that event, it was a group of 39 otherwise pretty intelligent people killed themselves in order to hop on a UFO that they believed was hiding behind the comet. The members of that group were convinced that their leader, Marshall Applewhite, was the Christ or the Messiah for this age. And it's much like the UFO cult leader, Rael, is telling people these days. And his group, this is their book, The True Face of God, it's meant to be an alien. His group has over 40,000 people today. So 39 or 40,000, they're all important souls. But it may sound crazy that people do believe that sort of thing, but this is America, and I respect that people have died just to give people the right to believe things like that, and even to act according to their own beliefs and their own conscience. So denying other people their freedom of right or religion, that's not my issue at all. That's not what I'm about. I just think that everyone has the right to your own beliefs and to follow your own conscience. But for me in 1997, the real issue was my conscience, because I wasn't really following it back then. Because what about me personally, see, as a childhood experiencer of the little gray bug-eyed men and things that go bump in the night, most of my life I'd long had an interest, and more than a passing curiosity, you'd say for sure, about the UFO phenomena in general. I believed it was all real from experience, no doubt. And I've spent a pretty significant portion of my young life researching it. And there's some, we'll understate for now, there's major truths involved in the what goes on when these beings are your childhood friends. And there's also some trauma involved in it. For if you believe the polls from last decade, it's 1 in 40 people, if you believe the Roper and Gallup polls on that. But we'll understate that now. And I'm well aware now of the stories of other people today who claim that they've had marvelous experiences with the aliens. And last year in one of my talks already, we dealt with that, what some researchers call screensaver memories or even abductee brainwashing. And I know some people get bent out of shape because not everybody chooses to give equal time to what people call good experiences and good aliens. And they're welcome to hold their conferences, too. Like I said, this is America. That's just my answer to that. But I do get offended kind of for myself and the 90% majority of abductees when other people want to discount or ignore what the rest of us have to say on that topics. But even with all that aside, number one, 15 years ago and more, I wasn't aware of other people's marvelous trips to the light fantastic with the aliens. And number two, that just really wasn't my experience. Based on what little I'd read in the 80s and the early 90s, is I had every reason to believe that I hadn't seen the last of these guys in my life either. Because the research that's come out in the last 15 years or so, one of the foremost commonalities of this experience is that if you were a childhood abductee, well, then you will be an adulthood abductee or experiencer, if you like that word better. So were your children, too. And most people will tell you, I think erroneously, if you're familiar with Joe Jordan already, well, that there's nothing that can be done about that. And it's probably your experience too, if there's any one thing true about the male of the human species, it's we just don't like not being in control of our own destinies. You know, you probably run into that, especially if you're a woman. But what I wrote in Come Sail Away in 1997 was for a young single guy who wanted nothing more than to have some fun with his life, this kind of bothered me. Because by the time I was around 20, and I'm 36 now, I was coming to the grips with the fact that this really had happened to me. But despite what seemed like a lot of negativity, I still wanted to believe that they were the good guys. And part of that is because I wanted to believe that I was special. I wanted to believe that I was chosen, or that there is some great cosmic scheme behind why these beings had done these things to me. And I especially want to know who they were, what they were, and to get to the bottom of it. And it really was more than an intellectual curiosity. It's kind of life and death, in fact, because I found it's hard to seriously plan your life ahead when you know something of that magnitude can and most likely will interrupt your plans. Like, for instance, it's hard to be dating a girl, for instance, that you might like to marry one day, and then you've got to wrestle with whether or not you're going to be an honest, forthright person and tell her these things that you believe to be true about yourself at the risk of her dumping you because, well, obviously you need some help. Or do you keep it a secret and don't tell her or anybody because then you're knowingly and selfishly bringing someone that you claim to love into an experience and your whole family that you wouldn't really wish on your worst enemy? So I've already seen the heads nodding. There's a couple people here I know that can relate to that, but just without any details, I went the honesty route on that one twice, in fact, and it didn't work out. Here I am, still single. But that's honestly the snag I think I ran into in my want to believe in the creature's good intentions. The snag that I would run into is deep down, at least on the inside, I'm basically an honest person and not necessarily a good person, and I can lie to myself. But sooner or later, I'll just get alone with myself and face facts. And when I was around 21 or 22, I took a more than one good, hard look at my life and the visitors in my life, and I just finally decided they didn't have my best interests at heart. My experience-based, honest belief back then, before ever studying out what anybody else was really saying, was that they were just up to no good. And I wasn't a Christian then. So when people would use the word demons to describe the aliens, I wasn't real receptive, as most in the UFO community understandably aren't. And I still don't think that's the correct terminology anyway. But I can see why so many Christians do arrive at that conclusion, as I did later on. But I felt that I was dealing with something evil anyway, and that I didn't want them in my life anymore. That's about age 21 or 22. And I wanted nothing more, really, with my life at that point than to just walk away from researching all this crap and just get on with a normal life. And I wanted my life to be focused on other things. And we all know everything happens for a reason, and so there's synchronicity in the universe, and God is in control and all that. So what I probably considered a totally unrelated series of unfortunate events, about a year and a half later, after vowing to walk away from UFO and alien research, I somehow became a Christian. I still don't understand it myself, but I wasn't in a church. It wasn't an altar call. Just Jesus spoke to me, pretty plainly, in fact. And I've followed him ever since 1992. At that point in my life, I read the whole Bible in 4 months, because I never had. And I read tons and tons of books. I learned everything I could about everything I could. And I kept my own secrets on this stuff to myself. I trusted no one with my alien stories. But my own earliest studies into the biblical views of the spiritual realm in general, they led me to believe that what people all over the world were calling aliens were really demons. And just on my own, and keeping that promise not to talk about this to other people, I didn't even start watching like Star Trek, Next Generation, or The X-Files until 1997. That's how distanced I purposely wanted to be from this stuff. And I wasn't reading Christian books on it either. There weren't that many out then. But all on my own in the 90s, I developed a theory about how this alien deception was tied into what many denominations teach about the end times, about the New World Order, how UFOs were going to start appearing more and more and push people towards a one-world government, and how the aliens were going to be saying that they were here to help humanity survive the coming Earth changes and the cataclysmic events, and once all the Christians were either killed or ejected off the planet, how they'd be here to help us usher in the new age of humanity by joining up with our galactic neighbors. Had all that figured out by 1993. At least I had it in my head, but there's honestly, pardon the French, there's just no way in hell I was going to write that down or give anyone any reason to wonder why I might even be interested in this topic, much less knowledgeable of it. So I went about my merry little respectable Christian life through most of the 90s. I started getting into some sales jobs, pursuing Christian education and training. I became part-time staff at a couple of churches that I was affiliated with in Nashville over the next few years. And so everybody thought the world of me, of course. I finally cleaned up and got respectable, sort of. And at the end of 1996, I was renting a nice little three-bedroom house with my fine, upstanding Christian male roommate. I was working as a licensed stockbroker for a private company selling oil drilling investments at $10,000 a pop over the phone to people whom losing $10,000 on a bad investment was actually good for their taxes. You know, that's what I was doing. It sounds real exciting to you, I'm sure. But now, that's a far cry from being some Bible-thumping lunatic out in the middle of the desert running an alienresistance.org and holding UFO conferences, I realize. But around 1990, 91, I'd walked away from just everything UFO-related and convinced myself that I wanted a life very different from the one that I have today. It's just that simple. Honestly, I felt that I'd suffered enough, and I'd even been in church long enough to not want to be considered one of those UFO nuts that we all hear about these days, you know. So the obvious question is, what happened? And it's Heaven's Gate happened in the 90s. You remember that, mostly. Excuse me. Strangely enough, I felt at the time that I let those people die through my inactions. And it's not just that they were dead, but the way they died, by believing that their leader was Jesus Christ and that a mass suicide was the way to enter heaven, I knew that those 39 people were in hell also. I'm not going to even apologize for saying that, because I knew that they'd fallen victim to what the Bible calls deceiving spirits and doctrines of devils. Now I believe, through later research, that Marshall Applewhite was actually a mind control victim himself. I used to villainize him, and now I feel more compassion because I think he was a victim as well. But I'm not really to blame for the deaths. I know all that. But in 1997, the simple truth for me was that I had a story. And over the years, I developed a certain viewpoint that maybe one of those people might have been persuaded by to make a different choice in their life if I'd shared it with anybody. Maybe two would have, maybe all of them would have, maybe none of them. But I had in me, I felt, the research and the scriptural truth to confront the lies that killed them, maybe make a difference in their lives. And I've known for years that God was wanting me to share it, in fact, but I was just too in love with my fine, upstanding Christian life to do it, to put myself out like that. And a few of the news reported that some of the people in that group had found Heaven's Gate because of their website, and that fact just somehow intrigued me. I wasn't a tech person back then. My roommate had a computer. And one night I got that old AOL search engine kind of going, and my fingers like literally almost trembling, I kid you not, because this pristine little life that I'd really gotten attached to was kind of flashing before my eyes. And I typed in three letters, UFO. That's when my life changed. Part of me died, another part of me was born. It wasn't really a transformation. It was just owning up to who I was and what God was demanding of my life. Because a couple hours later, I'd really cried a little, partly for the Heaven's Gate victims, but partly for the numbers of people that I saw in the future were going to be deceived into thinking along those exact same lines. I found out in 97 that deceiving spirits and doctrines of devils ruled the internet on the search term UFO. There wasn't even much legitimate information back then. At least you couldn't find it online, like the National UFO Reporting Center or MUFON. They didn't have great websites, and they weren't getting attracted. But Heaven's Gate had been, the website had been already closed down by the feds, and other members that weren't part of the suicide had already put up a mirror site that was on the web, getting tons of traffic because of the news event. But it was still teaching the exact same lies that killed their leader and encouraged people to commit suicide on their own at home as a way of joining the away team that had already departed. You know, your chance is still there. And it's heavensgate.com. You can check it out. It's all back online now. But my main realization then was there's next to nothing online that gave an honest, coherent, biblical interpretation of the UFO phenomena. The sites that even mentioned the Bible were closer to Heaven's Gate and the Raelian religion, meaning that anyone who is even a little bit curious about UFOs, or especially spirituality, was likely going to be led into a UFO cult, or at least they'd be led into a false belief system, even if they didn't practice it publicly with other like-minded people in rooms like this or whatever. But the top match, number one match for UFO back then, was Dan Gieb's UFO Folklore. And it's still the top match today on Google 8 years later. And you probably have seen it yourself along the... he's got some fine research links, no doubt. And I've been to the site as a resource tool a lot. But the first thing you get on his page are these quotes from Ezekiel chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 6, basically implying that what you're reading about in the Bible there is UFO encounters. And again, this is the number one match on Google for UFO, and it has been for some time. So whether you're spiritually inclined or not, the first thing that anybody typing UFO into search engines is exposed to is the idea that UFOs are just a huge part of the whole Bible. And Dan's not alone in believing that or teaching it. It's a widely prevailing view. Most every miracle you read about in the Bible is a UFO encounter. And there's some pretty persuasive arguments out there, and even television shows, authors, researchers saying that. Found that it is a compelling theory, and ultimately, though, it's just not scriptural. Because what we've seen last year, other times, is that real biblical evaluation of ideas like that, you might even go as far as to call it hack theology. Now, it is possible to take many random quotes out of the Bible and say, well, here, look, see, this could be a UFO. And I'd agree, it is. But if you leave that quote in the Bible and present it in context of the whole chapter, that idea just, it really loses steam fast. And you know how I backed that up on last year's talk. I gave that whole presentation, so I'm not going to go ahead and do it all. I'll just say for now that I believe that idea of UFOs in the Bible is, it's not that I disagree with it, but I'll go, their theology is way off. Don't have to name names, but they're grossly misinterpreting what the Bible actually says to make these arguments. And without making that whole argument today, I'm just letting you know where I stand on that idea. But the bottom line, in 1997, I knew I had to do something, or I felt it for sure I did, that God was calling me into this fray. And from that point on, I basically just threw myself into the work. I literally quit my day job at the oil brokerage firm, cut my working hours in half by going back to waiting tables, and I wrote the book that I'd been putting off for years. And I got to know my geek friends a little bit better and had them all teach me everything I needed to know about how to make a website, because I felt my mission field at that time was the Internet. And I can look back now and say that that book is, it's really elementary compared to what we're all reading and doing today. And it was a good freshman effort, but I wrote in detail then online and then eventually hard copy about what I thought about UFOs being a demonic deception and how their appearing was going to be the ultimate catalyst for pushing people into accepting a one-world government under an antichrist. Now, including my personal stories, finally, it gave me the just a certain edge that people are more willing to hear from someone who is, they're not just theorizing, but I'm also an experiencer. People didn't like what I had to say sometimes, or they disagreed with it, but nobody would refute that. That of all people, I certainly had the right to an opinion. And I just put it on the Internet. And back then, 97, 98, if you had a really kind of cool site, you could very easily get a link from the Art Bell webpage. And I did, and my traffic went from about 20 hits a day to 600 hits a day, literally overnight from that one link. Tremendous response, but very mixed. I did see the desired results, you might say, because I would get occasional emails from people who said seeing all this written out really changed their minds about the UFO phenomena, or that they were going back to church, or that they'd prayed the prayer that was listed on the website, things like that. Of course, I also got a lot of flack from different people, sometimes from people already in the church who were kind of slamming me for bringing the silly topic of UFOs into their religious beliefs. And then, of course, I'd get email from UFO enthusiasts who would slam me for bringing my religious junk into the serious field of ufology. So a lot of you have been there, I know. But for about 2 years in Nashville, I literally spent hours every day responding to the email I got from all sides. And I often learned a lot from the links and the information. People would just mail it straight to me. But mainly I also learned that I've got a long way to go from being an expert in this field. But I definitely also knew that I'd gotten more than a few things right as well, and that I definitely struck a few nerves. So, sharing with you, I don't know, the Guy Malone saga, if that's not what you came for, but just in giving you an overview of biblical ufology to date, just in whatever, humility, fairness, honesty, or whatever, Guy Malone has been a pretty somewhat major figure in shaping this tiny, tiny, tiny niche market. It's not fame and fortune. It doesn't impress the chicks or anybody that's out in the real world when you're an expert on UFOs and the Bible. But I suggested UFOs in the Bible to a lot like Yahoo and DMOZ, Open Directory, just to get my site more traffic. But it's not that my book was all that. I did want to make that point. Because before me, guys like Bill Allner and I.D.E. Thomas, they'd already published really good books on the subject. And not to mention Stan Deo, he's speaking later today. And eventually Chuck Missler and Mark Eastman kind of condensed a lot of other people's research into a book, and they called it their own. And these were all important books. But in 1997, I'd never seen any of them myself. And they're good sellers, they've borne fruit, but my question was, quite frankly, how many people who are really into UFOs care what Christian authors have to say on the subject? And especially, we're going to plop down money to find out what they had to say about it. So aside from putting my book on the internet for free and getting tons of traffic early in the internet age, another thing what I did differently that was so significant was in 1999, I moved here to Roswell, New Mexico, if you're watching on DVD. But I had no idea what to do when I was going to get here, just that God was calling me to be where anyone in the world who's interested in this topic was looking. My main plan was to get the book placed in all the tourism hotspots and maybe head back to Nashville pretty soon. But as it turned out, the UFO Museum, the number one tourist attraction here, you've all been there today or yesterday, I'm sure, they refused to carry the book there because it dealt with religion. It was what they told me. It was just their policy. Then I went to the big Christian bookstore here in town on Main Street, and they refused to carry the book also. Finish the sentence for me. Because it dealt with UFOs. You know, I mean, I live between Rock and Hard Place Avenue. You know, and a lot of you I know have experienced that same stuff. Rest of the story, commonly known, after I got here, I real quickly hooked up with two other important people in this field. That's Pastor Chris Ward and MUFON investigator Joe Jordan, who blew the shofar. Both these guys, they were taking their findings to the internet as well. And you remember when I said the first thing you see on UFO folklore is the reference to Genesis 6 was Chris's site was the only website on the internet then that I found, anyway, that was taking the topic seriously from a true biblical perspective, connecting it to UFOs, but saying that this was a spiritual phenomena rather than an extraterrestrial one. And Joe is the MUFON researcher who found and published the testimonies of people who were stopping their abductions through the authority of Jesus Christ's name, which also convinced him that this was a spiritual phenomena. But frankly, whether it's either of their sites or mine, if you're an outsider visiting, you really had no way of knowing if any of the information on these sites was all that credible. You might have thought you were on another Heaven's Gate website. There was just no way to tell. And so what I did in 1999 was I took off three of our websites, three people coming from very different backgrounds, all arriving at basically the same conclusions, and I put them under that single .org, alienresistance.org specifically. And doing that gave all these views of ours, I think, a pretty big credibility boost. Soon after that, we opened the physical location here in Roswell and basically just took the kind of stand and got the kind of attention that attracts a little bit more than attention from the press. When you've got that logo going here in the heart of Roswell, New Mexico, it gets in newspapers and when press travels through Roswell. But that site, I'd say, with all the new links, we'd keep adding other researchers, the articles that we'd keep adding to it, it became its own little juggernaut in a way of speaking. Because today, even without a link from Art Bell, it gets over 1,000 unique visitors per day. And I even have a link on the site that you can look at the stats, and it proves that. I'm not just saying that. So all I'm saying on that, it's not me, but it is a defining work in biblical ufology as a tiny, tiny niche. And aside from just the website, though, you can get a doctrinal statement on almost any topic that there is under the sun from most churches or someone who wants to talk to you at length about any topic you ask them about, but that's not so for UFOs. You're lucky if you get a blank stare instead of a rude one if you ask most Christian organizations how they feel about UFOs and life on other planets. And if you're I'm going to say it, if you're unfortunate enough to actually tell a pastor that you've been abducted and that you want some answers from him on this stuff, well, yeah, I mean, you're going to find yourself on the outside of his office really fast, and he's most likely going to refer you to a psychiatrist rather than the Bible for your answers on that. But so what Joe, Chris, and I started is probably the closest thing to an official doctrinal statement in all of Christendom on what the Bible says about these topics, as well as providing counseling for people who wanted the experiences stopped, if they did. And we have, I think, enough web traffic to prove that out there, people really do want to know what the Bible says on the topics. It's got to be the number one topic of interest in pop culture for the 21st century. And I think it's a shame that the church as a whole has been pretty silent and pretty irrelevant on this whole issue of UFOs and abductions. People will sometimes approach religious leaders with honest questions, and the answers they get are often fairly namby-pamby, you might say, like, well, the Bible doesn't really say anything about, or it's a mighty big universe, you know, it'd be wrong to assume that we're the only ones here, or, you know, well, God could have created life anywhere, I suppose, if he wanted to. And it just makes you say, well, duh, those aren't exactly profound statements. You know, I've heard 12-year-olds say things like that, and I think it's a shame so many people, pastors or not, Christians or not, will rest on those statements and beliefs as if that's a profound idea that settles the issue. But that's where most people stop, I think. But people still have the questions. Lots of people do. And a lot of times you have a very felt need to get some real answers on the subject, whether you're an experiencer or you've just had a sighting or just an honest and intellectual curiosity. People wouldn't approach a pastor lightly on this subject. They wouldn't approach anyone publicly unless they just really, really, really had to know. And when the pastors don't give them an answer or say that, I don't know, what most pastors, what they don't realize, what they're saying to that person, or what that person's hearing anyway for sure, is that my Bible and my God are insufficient for your needs. So go somewhere else. Get out of my face. That's the attitude, you know, that's given sometimes. But so they do go somewhere else. That's why the UFO cults are thriving today. A person will wind up there, and it's like, yeah, sure, come on, we'll talk to you. You know, we've got people just like you. Why don't you come in here and talk about your experiences? And if you're really good at it, you can write a book, and we'll put you on the circuit. So people with this felt need, they get a sense of community, and they get a sense of even mission sometimes in becoming ambassadors or spokespersons for the aliens. And that's everything that the church is supposed to offer, but they couldn't get it from the church, and because the church is generally unwilling to just discuss or engage people in what does the Bible say about these topics. And probably halfway through my time, so what does the Bible say about these topics, you're wondering, finally getting to the topic of it. I am going to go over on my time, by the way, I have to warn you. I've rehearsed this at an hour and 40 minutes, but we'll probably start David Flynn a little later, and maybe push the schedule back if we have to. I'm kind of joking, but it's all day. It's my party. I'll go over if I want to. Because I think there's more than a bit I want said, and I'm going to put this talk on the internet to where you can just click on it, listen to the audio. That's why I'm not using PowerPoint or anything. I just want people worldwide to be able to hear these. So summing up super, super in brief, the demonic hypothesis, the rapture hypothesis, and the Genesis 6 hypothesis almost entirely sum up everything that biblical researchers have ever had to say on these subjects. Because beginning in the 1970s, many Christian books and authors came out saying that it was all demons. And that's not news to anybody here. Even Jacques Vallée, one of the founding fathers of non-religious-based scientific ufology, he made the correlations, at least, between the largely non-physical nature of UFO reports to so-called demonic apparitions. And he directly compared the reports of abductions to the medieval reports of demonic possession. And in very big-selling books, he did this. And for a non-Christian scientist who's discussed UFOs before the United Nations to say such things, and he even wrote one book about it called Messengers of Deception, well, that's pretty hefty. And his published views have given a lot of Christians a lot of steam in regard to the demonic hypothesis. And that's probably why nobody in the UFO community wants to hear from Jacques Vallée today, even though he's a founding father and one of the most noted authors. But like I was said it last year, just because you don't believe in demons is no reason to write off that view any more than someone saying that this stuff can't be aliens because I don't believe in aliens is a good reason to write off that view. Because your dogma or your lack of belief in anything doesn't make it not true. The question, I think, for either belief system becomes, well, why do you believe it's aliens or demons? And what actual proof could you offer me for that view? So I think we're all kind of still waiting for proof on the alien view. I ended my talks last year describing what I'd consider real proof because I think there's just a lot that can be faked today. But there's definitely sufficient evidence for UFO and abduction phenomena. We presented all that, I think, to the best satisfaction of an honest skeptic anyway. But I also believe that the extraterrestrial hypothesis is just that. It's a hypothesis. And it's not the only one on the table. It's just kind of like the theory of evolution. If it were a fact and provable, we'd call it the law of evolution, like the law of gravity. People assume they presuppose it's a fact. And I think people, when you hear phrases like the extraterrestrial phenomena or the extraterrestrial reality or even the law of evolution, people are just simply expressing a belief system. It's not totally supported by facts or science, but it's actually a religious belief when people say things like that. And I kind of talked about that a little bit last year. But for the biblical side, what I'll say is for many Christians, it's not actual UFO research that leads to the demonic view, but it's the fruit of the phenomena. Quite simply, Jesus taught that you could judge a tree by its fruits. Whatever a thing's producing is a pretty good indicator of what it is on the inside. So what many Christians believe casually, I mean, without doing any homework in the whole UFO phenomena, just in UFO phenomena as believers, is what they see is a cult religion that denies the Bible and the ultimate lordship of Jesus Christ as God's only son and means of salvation. And I know that's not a final selling point to a lot of people, but to most Christians it is. They'll see that the fruit of a strong belief in UFOs is a person who actually denies Christ or doesn't really believe the Bible as it's written, and in many cases believes that the aliens are here to save us, for that matter, and that's enough. Just look no further, that person's going to think, because that person's obviously following a demonic influence. But looking past that, let's get past just the surface appearance, someone more open-minded or a little more inclined to do a little more research before making up their mind on this topic, you take the time to find out what the messages, the contactees, abductees, experiencers, and what people who claim communication with aliens, sometimes through channeling, big Christian no-no, by the way, you'd ask, well, what are these people saying the aliens say? And you'd examine those messages before you even begin to make any final judgments. And Bill Allner, he's now a PhD journalism professor. He did a talk on those messages here last year. He's got a couple really excellent books on the subject documenting those messages in investigative journalistic fashion. But it's probably no surprise to the people in this room that the aliens' documented messages are not really, they're not scientific like you at least might expect from an advanced race, but they're mostly far and away, mostly spiritual messages. And I don't think that's bad in itself. It's just, it turns out that the messages they give are, without exception, 180 degrees in opposition to everything that the Bible says about spiritual matters and about the nature of God himself. Since we did it last year, I'm not even going to try to document all those for you here. But one quote wasn't used last year. It comes from Ron Rhodes' book, Alien Obsession. And Ron Rhodes is Dallas Theological Seminary graduate, if anybody cares about that stuff. But his quote that I've used in the past is, an examination of the evidence indicates that beyond any doubt that a primary agenda of the alien visitors, whoever or whatever they are, is to change the way human beings think about God and his word, and to replace exclusive Christianity with a religion of universalism. As well, the visitors seem intent on drawing people deeper and deeper into various forms of occultism, including divination, out-of-body experiences, clairvoyance, and spiritism. Now, Allner and Rhodes, they're not just expressing knee-jerk reactions and calling aliens demons, because that's just what Christians do with things they can't immediately explain. These are degreed men. They've done some real research into the phenomena, and they take abductee testimony at face value. you know, now who does that even? But these Christian guys did. And they only report what these people themselves are actually saying. And that number would include me a long time ago. So as far as many Christians are believing that aliens are demons, it's the teachings of the alleged extraterrestrials are all the proof they need. Because the entities seduce people away from biblical truths, they encourage beliefs and practices that the Bible clearly denounces. And to them, well, that means demons. Even if they were honest to God aliens, every one of them that's ever communicated with humans is clearly following a demonic influence himself, at least in his teachings and doctrines. And the Christian's going to say the entity should definitely be avoided. But even getting beyond that, beyond the messages that the visitors convey, you'd want to look at the actual evidence for their interaction with humans. Now, if you're not already a believer in the abduction phenomena, I'm not going to make that case today. We gave that topic a lot of time last year as well. But I will say you've got some serious homework to do just in considering the published works of degreed men. I'm talking PhDs like Jacobs and Mack, if you don't believe that abductions are true. But for this group, I'm pretty sure it's just sufficient to say that the evidence is there for you. But what that evidence suggests when you really study it is kidnapping, sexual assault, and psychological manipulation of all sorts, just scratching the surface. And at minimum, you might say it represents moral evil. So the argument goes. And it's not that Christians or the Bible itself are hostile to a belief in extraterrestrials. That's one of Mike Heiser's topics last year, that Orthodox Christianity could easily accommodate extraterrestrials, and for much of church history has favored the possibility. In fact, most people in this century wouldn't even believe that. But just getting out of the hypothetical, looking at what's actually going on today, studying the available evidence, even this same non-Christian UFO researcher, Jacques Vallée, he said in his 1990 book, Confrontations, that the medical examination to which abductees are said to be subjected, often accompanied by sadistic sexual manipulation, is reminiscent of the medieval tales of encounters with demons. It makes no sense in the sophisticated or technical framework. Any intelligent being equipped with the scientific marvels that UFOs possess would be in a position to achieve any of these alleged scientific objectives in a shorter time and with fewer risks. I think the word sadistic really stands out there, because demonic or extraterrestrial, what we're dealing with seems to be evil here. Mike even said last year at his talk at the X conference this April, is that even if you prove that this is just ETs and not demons interacting with humanity, well, you've still got a really tough sell convincing the church, or anyone, I'd say, in their right mind, to be enthusiastic about this phenomena, just in light of what the evidence for it suggests. Now, again, if you don't believe demons exist, that's your worldview, you're entitled to it, but your dogma is not going to convince the millions of people that do, that they don't. And the minute you introduce a biblical worldview, which does incorporate angels and demons into its reality, and then you begin to examine the unbiblical doctrines of the visitors, the evidence for the sadistic nature of their actions, well, pretty soon you've got a dead ringer for demonic activity. And even the so-called good aliens, they teach things so contrary to the Bible that when you combine with that, with their ability to dematerialize and come and go, there's a quote from 1 Timothy 4:1 that I think it's quite frankly impossible to avoid when studying the UFO and abduction phenomena, of just about deceiving spirits and doctrines of devils. I'm still open to the possibility of real extraterrestrials, but I think the burden of proof for that argument has really gotten huge, given even there's cursory evidence for a more demonic view. And I do just want to disclaim, I'm taking some time this morning just to be the bad guy for a change. I'm just going to say some of the tough stuff up front so the other speakers don't have to. They can get up and share a little more, maybe even be lighthearted or fun with you. But with the tough stuff said up front, in regard to the abductions and the contactee messages, I believe there's a good deal of UFO research available that just doesn't fit the demonic hypothesis that easily or neatly either. And that's why I've affirmed the more credible researchers as speakers here in the past as well. Definitely needs to be looked at, whether you're a skeptic or a believer. That doesn't automatically mean it's extraterrestrial, but I just don't think you can write off everything in the field of UFO research as being demons either. I think that you actually have to separate the UFO and the abduction phenomena and treat them as two distinct categories, they will overlap often, but they may not always be related phenomena. There's a UFO phenomena that could be extraterrestrial, that could be only man-made, could be paranormal in some other sense, yada, yada, yada. And the contactee reports seem, at least, to be almost certainly demonic, at least in their doctrines, and the abductee reports largely might be as well, or fallen angels, more specifically, like Genesis 6. But there also seems to be a what I call a covert human element involved in some abductions, which is using this truer or the paranormal abductions just to cover its tracks, knowing that it'll all be blamed on aliens. And that's what I mean when I say that perhaps not all UFO and abduction reports can be really reduced down to demonic activity. But I personally think that man-made globalist interests are the most likely explanation for most UFOs. But I do believe, even no matter how strongly I believe what I believe it's just really wrong to pin all the reports of UFOs or abductions on any one hypothesis. What you're doing is you're playing a game of pin the tail on the chameleon. The minute you think you've got the answer that fits, the entity will change and then run off on you, looking stupid, holding your hypothesis as the only possible one for it. But changing lanes, we'll move back just to the biblical research today, since that's the topic today. In some of the Christian literature out there, including my own book, you'll see this reference to what many Christians call the rapture. Quite simply, that's the belief that says Christians are going to be removed from the planet at some future point, before all the ugly stuff in the book of Revelations really hits the fan, before, middle, after all that. Now, if that occurred, though, and there were still people left on the earth that weren't Christians, well, how on earth would that event be explained away? Just without causing everyone left to believe in God and repent, since it happened just like these Bible teachers said it would. In short, if you were an antichrist or a beast or a false prophet, how are you going to keep people on your side, is the question after this event. Kind of a no-brainer. This is elementary to a lot of Christian believers. There's a popular explanation could be that UFOs took away all the Christians in order to cleanse the earth of all those dogmatic types who are just holding everyone else back as a species from evolving into true light beings and joining the galactic brotherhood. Now, it may or may not happen that way, that the rapture happens and it's explained as UFOs per se, but the point is, many Christians, biblical ufology to date, many Christians believe that the entire UFO abduction phenomena is just a ruse, just intended to condition mankind to this disappearance of so many people without them ever believing that it was indeed a biblically prophesied event. You may have seen this, a lot of you. Just one book about it comes out and says that Project World Evaluation, I don't know if I'm on Ted's camera or not. Thank you. Project World Evacuation. It's compiled by Tuella, by the Ashtar Command. And the cover alone, it just shows you all these people being beamed up into the flying saucer. The text at the top of it says, UFOs to assist in the great exodus of human souls off this planet. And you need to know, though, that not everyone who's a Christian believes in this rapture doctrine. Many Christian denominations or scholars believe that it really is just a myth, or it's bad doctrine at best, or it happens so late in this tribulation period that there'd be no need to explain it away because it's the last thing that happens as Jesus returns, not a few years before. But what's funny is it's not just Christians confused or fighting over the topic, because apparently, Tuella, whatever aliens comprise Ashtar Command, they apparently believe it's going to happen because they're already publishing books that explain what it was before it even happens for you. She's not the only one who's put out some version of that story, and it's a good thing because it was predicted to occur by the year 2000. So, don't set dates. Never, never set dates. But this rapture by UFO hypothesis, it props up the demonic view to many people, because what you see in that example is you've got non-Christian spiritists already being conditioned by New Age channelers to believe that this rapture, if it does occur, as many Christians exactly as they say it will, that it wasn't really the Christian rapture, just UFOs doing what they've been doing all along, abducting people for their own good. We're going to move you off to another planet. You're going to be recycled in a reincarnation kind of way, and you dogmatic souls can go somewhere else while the rest of us get on with evolving into the global brotherhood or true light beings. And that's just the one more little element for biblical ufology today that convinces many Christians that the whole thing is not really extraterrestrials. And what may be real, they're going to say it's just real demons manifesting in real space and time. Now, Genesis 6, that's really my favorite one, though. It's the one that most people that even begin to study the topic that aren't Christians generally have the most exposure to. 95% of this room well knows Genesis 6 teaches that the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were fair or beautiful and took of them that they chose. And that's the origin of the biblical Nephilim. In the Nephilim is the nearly inspired version, or giants, if you're using the King James. That's the one Paul carried, we all know. Yeah, right. But many people, when they're reading that, you're going to roll right past it. And they're not going to get why that verse is so important to this research. But UFO people will generally immediately see something that nobody else does. And that's why Genesis 6 is on the front of everybody else's mind that researches this stuff from even a remotely biblical perspective. Because just like the modern abduction accounts, what we'll see is non-human entities taking human women and created hybrid entities. And it's like, holy David Jacobs, John Mack, Bud Hopkins, Batman. There's an amazing correlation between what the Bible says and what over 8 million Americans, according to the 96 Gallup poll, believe is happening to them. Now, people who aren't that well versed in the Bible or Christianity or doctrine or whatever often begin thinking, it's like, well, apparently UFOs and aliens visited mankind in the ancient world, and now they're back. And people who really study this out from an orthodox biblical view, though, they might think of Matthew 24:37, where Jesus says that the end times will repeat what was happening in Genesis 6, or in the days of Noah, specifically. And this group will begin thinking, well, fallen angels are once again taking human women as they did before, so the end must be near. So you might say what it really boils down to is not your views of UFOs or abductions, but it boils down to your view of the Bible. If you think the Bible is just a bunch of myths and wrongly copied histories, moral fables, then you're going to use that passage, and really the whole Bible in general, just to prop up your view of extraterrestrials and aliens and UFOs visiting the planet, just like the cult leaders and some of the other authors I've mentioned do. And what we're saying, from our point of view, obviously, is that you'd be wrong in that view. If you believe the Bible is what it says it is, God's revealed word to mankind, which contains an accurate account of all the matters, at least that it speaks of, inspired, infallible, then what you begin to believe is that the Bible does indeed contain some really relevant information on the nature of today's visitors. I think Mike Kaiser, again, he's very succinctly put it last year when he said that the Bible has had this phenomenon pegged for a long time. But there's two big problems with this view. Number one is, this Genesis 6 scenario, it definitely seems to draw a correlation between the Bible and modern abduction reports, but that's all. It doesn't really say a darn thing about UFOs or technology in general, just non-human visitors interbreeding with humanity, like modern abduction reports today speak on, but maybe not the same. You got a little further to go to convince me on that one, Mr. Christian. Number two, the problem with that view is, for over 1,500 years, the Christian church has been teaching a false doctrine about Genesis 6 by saying, no, that wasn't really angels mating with human women. That was the lineages of Seth and Cain who weren't supposed to marry each other. And that's a view that originated about 400 AD, and it's clearly not what the text says in any language, but that's the position still taught by most modern seminaries. So, effectively speaking, the modern church is pretty much neutered from even being able to participate in the discussion of UFOs and aliens because of that Genesis 6 wrong interpretation. Now, that wasn't the position, I'll say, of Judaism throughout pre-Christian millennia, and it wasn't the position of the first three centuries of church history either. But until the Sons of Seth doctrine came along, the orthodox interpretation of that passage, Genesis 6, was that fallen angels could and did interbreed with human women. And some today, they go to saying, well, Jesus taught that angels couldn't have sex, so this has to be wrong. And no, that's really not what Jesus taught. But we did such extensive teaching on Genesis 6 last year. Again, I'm just not even going to try to repeat all that here. But I will say that the destruction of the Nephilim, that was part of the reason for the flood. The New Testament in several places affirms the angelic view of Genesis 6. And what Christian people who teach that the sons of Seth material the doctrine, what they don't realize is that they are teaching a damnable heresy and a destructive doctrine. Thank you. That denies the truth of Scripture and it maligns the character of God. Because when the Bible says that the Nephilim were on the earth after the flood as well, whether the more angels continued this activity or some Nephilim survived, that's all debated. But the point is the race continued, and then everything you read in the Bible in the Old Testament where God is telling Joshua and the Israelites to destroy every man, woman, child, and even animal in certain areas, that's God continuing the destruction of these angel, human, hybrid Nephilim, cannibal, sorcery-working, little false god wannabes. And if you don't get that, if you don't realize that these people weren't even human, then you get a pretty skewed view of God from reading the Old Testament or just attending church when you're a kid. If you don't believe that the Genesis 6 account deals with fallen angels, then you do believe that God is a murderer of innocent men, women, and children with no apparent reason. And that's why I take this topic so seriously, and I'll defend that position to my grave, not because it props up what you might say I choose to believe about UFOs and abductions, but because it teaches such a wrong view of God. And that's my father you're calling a wanton, murdering, insane, savage, unjust God. So, but that's what the church is doing when they promote this theory. The Sons of Seth doctrine is a false doctrine. For our purposes today, I'm just saying, sorry, either you were here or you weren't last year, that you've seen that DVD already, you get it or you don't. But we've got Genesis 6 study guides on alienresistance.org, and you can see the essential Theology Volume 1 DVD. You will come away from that convinced that Genesis 6 deals with fallen angels. So what I was saying earlier is either you think the Bible wrongly calls aliens angels, or you've already begun to see that the world today is perhaps wrongly calling angels aliens. Did I say that right? Okay, yeah. But that's where so many people in the biblical ufology field have hung our hat. That the premise of today's speakers, if they do believe that the Bible's correct, and most of the people here more or less do also, now you want to take it all a little further and see how does this relate to Bible prophecy. So all of the speakers today get this Genesis 6 view. They have for quite some time. And they've begun to realize that not only changes your view of the Old and the New Testaments, but you start to project it into biblical prophecy. So we all kind of know there's long been this cottage industry on kind of sketchy or usually very debatable doctrines around Bible prophecy. Much of this is kind of exemplified by the Left Behind book series or Hal Lindsey's writings from the 1980s. But one major problem with all the views in print and those that are being taught across the pulpits of most churches is that those teaching them apparently have no clue of this Genesis 6 paradigm. And in keeping in Matthew 24:37, they have no realization that the sons of God, or the watchers, as Daniel calls them, are due for a major resurgence in the end times, possibly the hybrid offspring as well. And just suffice to say, folks, this changes things. This changes your whole picture of the future. Just for instance, if you realize that Satan's goal is to imitate God in his effort to supplant him, some people already think that the so-called Antichrist is going to come duplicating Jesus' miracles to be received by the world as the Messiah. So you ask yourself, what exactly is the first miracle associated with Jesus Christ? I don't mean the wine. It's the incarnation with an earthly mother and not a human father. Holy David Jacobs, it comes to mind again. But in the modern abduction reports, you'll see that instead of producing giants like in the Old Testament, we have this grand experimentation that seems to be going on to produce something that passes completely for human. So with that Genesis 6 paradigm, it's possible that when the false Christ appears, he'll come imitating Jesus' incarnation as a fully man and fully God, but he'll be fully man and fully angel, a hybrid or a bastard imitation of Jesus Christ, a Nephilim. And I've kind of tipped Mike's hand prematurely by saying that. But once you begin to apply the Genesis 6 material to the present and to the future, your mind just begins to ponder possibilities like that. Chris Ward shared that idea with me 5 years ago in a hotel room, in fact. What we've done with Ancient of Days, though, is we've covered the preliminary material pretty thoroughly that might open your mind to possibilities that most modern Bible teachers, I'm going to say, just aren't theologically equipped to even allow for or to think of. So we've covered the ancient text, the view of fallen angels interbreeding with humanity, not only in the Bible, but every history, religion, mythology, folklore. Most people thought that they were gods back then, or even aliens, like people many do today. We've studied the best evidence for UFOs and abductions, but there's the sobering realization now that Matthew 24:37 is at least a possible indicator that the modern repeats of these occurrences could indicate a major signal that we're close to the end times right now. There's other signals, some that's going to be covered today, but Jesus clearly taught we could not know the day and hour of his coming, but he also clearly taught that we could know the season if we were watchful. So David Flynn later is going to share with you a little bit about how the heavens themselves declare the glory of God, how the Jewish understanding of constellations marks the ages of time and seasons, is the Genesis 1 word. Mike Kaiser is going to bring out the Genesis 6 Nephilim supernatural aspects of Armageddon that are usually ignored by other Bible teachers. But to my mind, while the sexual and the hybridization elements of Genesis 6, they do allow for a correlation between today's reports and the days of Noah, there's still something not quite here yet, and I think it has to come to pass before we could even say for sure that we're in the end times. Because Mike pointed this out last year, that the occurrences in Genesis 6 aren't really abductions per se. They appear to be mostly consensual relationships. Women were taken, but grammatically in the Hebrew, taken by force is not what's implied. It's just the way we say a man took a wife. And I saw that in a concordance a few years ago and kind of scratched my head, but you can look it up yourself. You'll see it too. So I'm really glad that Mike went into it. But if we believe that a repeat of the days of Noah is essential to the end times, then this is really important. It's very, very important, because the whole rest of Matthew 24:25 goes, wars, rumors of wars, earthquakes, famines, false prophets, rotten kids, all that stuff. These are all things that we see to one degree or another for most of history, and especially more today, especially those rotten kids. I was one of them, I know that. But the one thing that's missing, just to my mind, I could be wrong on this, is we're not yet repeating the days of Noah, because we're not yet in an age where the angels, or aka aliens, are openly communing with humanity. Everything in the abduction literature today is covert, and it's forced and done covertly. So whatever else is going on in the world, I'm not personally heading for the hills until I see this open communion of non-human life forms and the daughters of men marrying and giving themselves in marriage to these beings or entities. That's just my theory, though. One prominent feature of the end times, that it's just truly not fulfilled yet, so I would tell people relax a little, just a little, though. Is it's not fulfilled that there's open sexual communion between angels and humans, being very prominent in society and even approved of as a somewhat normal and acceptable behavior around the earth, and possibly producing their children too. Now, if I'm wrong on all that, on that has to take place first, and either death or the rapture takes you out of here tomorrow before you had a chance to either confess your sins or max out your credit cards, whichever is your thing, you know, I'm sorry. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling there. But the other major, major hole in biblical ufologist theories is, what does Genesis 6 have to do with UFOs or technology per se? Nothing. So for that topic, we covered this last year again, we at least have the Jewish Book of Enoch. We know today it was authenticated, 1947's discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls. I spoke on it all last year. It's quoted from and referred to as prophecy in the New Testament. Doesn't mean it's canon, but it affirms from an external source, historic and ancient, it affirms the Genesis 6 view of fallen angels that the church has badly neglected teaching for 1,500 years. It also details that the fallen angels were advancing mankind's technology, though, in the pre-flood world. One of the technologies it speaks of, just for instance, is metallurgy. So if you know the Roswell folklore, well, there's an exotic metal sometimes associated with the Roswell incident. You might remember last year David Flynn's talk. He gave an idea on the Watchers and the Roswell and the Book of Enoch. And Jim Wilhelmsen, he also gave a talk on the occult inspiration of the technology behind most modern man-made UFOs. And bringing even the man-made stuff, that puts it sort of back in the realm of biblical theology, if it's occult-inspired. But when you kind of look at those ideas, Stan Deo's talk later today is probably going to be a little fascinating, knowing how real this stuff is. Because if Enoch speaks of the Watchers or the fallen angels advancing the technology, it's possible, I'm just going to say possible, that even that whole of Genesis 6 not being dealing with UFOs, it's possible that that hole is even filled. And it, admittedly, it's going to take a while for all these pieces to come together for anybody. Once it does, it becomes pretty coherent. You might figure out where it's all going just by logical deduction without seeing it in biblical prophecy. But I'm sorry, because you're obviously at a disadvantage. If you're trying to absorb all this fresh at this hour of the morning without having looked at last year's material, it's just not going to click for you right now this quickly. But off the cuff, in the past, my somewhat simplistic view expressed in Come Sail Away, the book that I published on the internet years ago, it also had to do with one world government and the Antichrist taking power in the earth. The UFO phenomena completely aside, obviously we're not quite there yet either. But anyone can see that all the pieces are in place for this system to go into effect in, I think, a very short amount of time. Just for instance, the Mark of the Beast is a favorite topic on Bible prophecy teachers. Later today, Norm Franz is going to give you an overview of how the entire world's existing financial structures could be brought online to a one-world system, and that most of us are already enslaved to it, in fact. So privacy aside, cashless society is not a bad idea in itself, but it is one more thing that the Bible clearly says is a sign of the last days. And there's also, however, a real, real downside on teaching Bible prophecy that I have to address before turning any of these guys loose on you, though. It's that teaching this material, especially convincingly, it just has a tendency to make people stop living their lives, quit their jobs, and want to run for the hills. And I'm just telling you, that is not what we're about here, because the Bible commands us to work, not just to support ourselves, but so that we can actually partly have something to give to other people and remain useful tools in God's hands all the way until the end. So you're going to see that even among those that are speaking today, there's speculation involved, and probably quite a bit of disagreement on some of the major certain issues. Because we mentioned the rapture already, I'll just throw it out. We all know, even the Christians who believe in the rapture, there's sharp disagreement about how and when it might occur. Because Patrick Heron, I believe, is a pre-tribber, means that all good Christians are out of here 7 years before Jesus returns and won't go through any of the stuff in Revelation. But interestingly enough, Norm Franz told me on the phone months ago when we were talking about coming up here, is that he believes that the pre-tribulation rapture is one of the greatest idols in the American church. And those are pretty strong words for two people that are going to be sharing a stage together. But what you have to know about us is that we're all human. We see through a glass darkly, okay? And even realizing that, Stan, it's funny, he has a very detailed prophecy chart on his website that his wife Holly drew up. He actually has the wisdom to mark it possible rapture here, possible rapture here, possible rapture here. And Norm Franz has this running joke I saw on his video a long time ago. When he's teaching prophecy, he'll bring you this part in Revelations that says, there was silence in heaven for the space of 30 minutes. And he asks, you know what that 30 minutes is for, don't you? He's like, well, that's to give all the prophecy teachers time to adjust their charts according to what's already happened. Then, of course, he'll go on and give you his best stab at his prophecy chart, but it's just not an exact science. Once you begin to study this out, almost done, but not quite, you're going to find out that there are certain of us, of our ilk, Christian prophecy types, who also believe in a thing called a false rapture, or two or three that might occur, just to further confuse the issues here. Some would say that some covert New World agency would use something like this Project Moonbeam technological thing just to disappear vast numbers of certain Christians, because that would throw the rest of the church into confusion and even depression over missing the rapture. Jim Wilhelmsen, he's shared with me how he thinks the Antichrist is going to take out many of the New Age prophets, not the Christians, but New Age prophets and teachers through a kind of rapture. And that could really confuse the church as well, because then you could teach that the rapture was good doctrine, but the New Agers were really God's chosen, not the Christians. So the church is then going to fall away and start chasing after New Age books and teachings. That's her position in this book, by the way, too, is that the New Agers are the ones that get raptured out. So Even Chris Ward's material, I shared some of that last year, is that even good Christians can be taken by fallen angels, just like Jesus was taken to the high mountain and the top of the temple. So without a technological conspiracy theory, this same idea could be implemented, I'd say, by certain fallen angels just to wreak havoc with the church, to inspire a falling away. Because when you think about it, if even 1% of the church disappears, whether in a second or overnight, and you're not one of them, how are you going to feel about God if you're faithful all these years and you're not one of them, okay? So those are really, they're just some of the examples that are out there. But regardless of what or when you believe about the rapture, what I am going to say, stone me later, is that belief in the rapture is one of our greatest exploitable weaknesses as the Christian church, if you assume that we have an enemy. And I'm just warning you, if you find yourself flying through the air one day, my charge to you, test that spirit. Thanks. Because it could be a fallen angel, or it could be some technological device that you need divine intervention to get out of. Jesus isn't going to be mad if you do what the Bible says and test the spirit. If it's really Michael or Jesus, you're not going to be able to stop it. But there's plenty of other people who honestly teach that the entire book of Revelation could be completely staged. It could be faked through weather machines, engineered wars, nuclear disasters, false prophets, fallen angels, all work together just to force this one world government thing to set the stage for humanity to embrace and receive the Antichrist or any power hungry dictator. If he got, so what I'm warning you is don't be deceived by signs and wonders into falling for a scripted Hollywood version of the end times, because man-made UFOs, holograms, they could all be a huge part of this deception, and many just to make people think that we're under alien attack. Because one of the theories is that the Antichrist would come along and broker a deal with the good aliens just to unite the world to fight off the bad aliens. Because there was years ago, Joe Jordan, he's been saying, he's called this good alien, bad alien scenario just a game of good cop, bad cop for years. It's just another ruse. But overall, it pains me to think that the church as a whole is not equipping people to discern the realities behind the UFO stuff, because there's potential for mass deception. Aside from Genesis 6, that's not so much the problem, is that I think it's an ego problem, because Christians and pastors, they say, well, Jesus says that false Christs and prophets could appear to deceive the elect if that were possible. And then we just consider, well, I must be therefore immune from deception because I'm a Christian. It's like I automatically get this anointing to not be deceived because I call myself a Christian. Both recorded instances of that statement where Jesus said that, though, he follows it, emphasizing, so be on your guard. I've warned you of everything ahead of time. So there's the implication, there's sound, anointed teaching that guards a believer from deception, not just some supernatural immunity from it. But we're not getting this type of teaching in the churches today. And, I mean, if you were, you wouldn't be here in the desert listening to me ramble on about this stuff. Since you are here, if all kinds of things are going wrong in the world, I was going to say, if you've not been raptured out yet, think about how God protected the Israelites during the plagues of Egypt. And know that that same protection from God's wrath is yours. It's through the Passover lamb, ours, if you overcome and if you keep his word. We're never promised to be kept entirely from Satan's wrath. For most of church history, the saints have had a very uncomfortable, usually bloody existence. So if the pre-trib rapture is wrong, and fire falls from the sky and all this stuff starts happening, remember Noah. It's a type of the rapture. Christian teachers teach it all the time, but he wasn't lifted out until well after the rain started to fall. The rain was necessary before he could even go yet, but he was protected also. So if the pre-trib rapture is right and things kind of start looking bad, just think about what I said about how the end times could be faked by man-made or fallen angel conspiracy forces. Antichrist, do what Jesus said, occupy until he comes. And if he takes you out then, before then, bonus. Just don't be fooled into thinking the end is here just because the world starts fitting your preconceived notions of what the end times have to look at. Because since the very first century, Christians have always been teaching that Jesus' return was imminent based on whatever signs they saw in their day. And we've always said that the end is near. And to date, we have always been wrong. No matter how sure we were of these biblical interpretations and the signs going on around us, at the time. We've never gotten it right for 2,000 years, and we look pretty silly every time we say tomorrow. It's right now. Even Old Testament Jews, there was plenty of prophecies concerning the Messiah's appearance, plainly spelled out in the Torah. They had a lot of disagreements about when he was going to come and what things were going to look like once he got here. Guess what? They all got it wrong. When he did appear, all the signs were being fulfilled right in front of their eyes. Most of them didn't get it. It's only with hindsight that some of them got it in some cases. And today, most of them still don't get it. And they certainly didn't see the appearance of the church, for that matter. Although the Messiah is called a light to the Gentiles many times in the Torah, and it said that the nations would worship him. Well, that's a pretty big chunk of prophecy to have before your eyes the whole time and still not see it. So I'm asking, is it possible that the same thing could at least happen in some way to us? My old pastor in Nashville, before I moved here, this is the pastor that actually blessed my calling into UFO ministry, and they gave me money and all that stuff, being supportive to come here. That's a one in a million Christian leader, I understand. Hi, Brad, if you're watching this. He said the entrance of the church into history was a complete mystery. So don't be surprised if the church's exit from history is equally mysterious. Then, like all the rest of us, he'd go on and give you his version of a prophecy chart. But all I'm saying, all this, I got to disclaim to you, we don't want anybody running out and cashing in the kids' college funds just based on something you pick up here today that one of us said. Because there's another downside to teaching biblical prophecy. Is that, and on a different related topic now, just keep it cool. Don't cash in the kids' college funds. That's the point I was making. The other downside is that most of the time in Christian settings, people will do their darndest to convince you that the end is here just because they want to make you see a walking altar, come up the aisle, walk an altar call or something. And I want you to know that's not exactly what we're about here either today. Because another preacher I used to hang out with, he would very wisely say, we are never, ever, ever called in Scripture to teach the second coming of Jesus Christ as an evangelistic message. He came, he died, he rose. It's a simple story. Those who believe it are saved. So, this isn't one of those events where we throw all this end time stuff at you just to get you to come to Jesus at the end of the day. And I can do that now so you don't feel cheated. I want you to put your shields down, though, while others are speaking, and you can enjoy it. Because the real topic on that question, salvation, all that stuff, has nothing to do about the end times. It goes all the way back to Abraham in the book of Genesis. No matter what's going on in the world today, or in the news, or in the global conspiracy thing, or even in your life, the only question that matters is, do you have faith in God's promised Messiah, as Abram did, and became the father of many nations? Is God's promised Messiah your only hope in this age and in the one to come? So if any time today you actually find yourself suddenly believing Jesus really is Lord of all and that he was resurrected from the dead on the third day after the cross, come talk to one of us. We'll be glad to pray with you. I'd actually recommend Bill in the back, Norm or Patrick, because you can throw your best questions at them and they'll work it out with you, and you can pray with them or something like that later if you want to, but catch them at their table, buy them dinner, whatever. But whether you talk to any of us or not, if you believe in your heart that what I just said, God raised Jesus from the dead, if you confess him as Lord with your mouth before others, then you're saved. But if you don't really believe all that, and all this talk kind of worries you, this is going to sound incredibly crass, but if all you're really interested in is fire insurance, I recommend Allstate. Don't waste our time. I'm not going to waste your time with an altar call on that end. It's really simple. Either the Holy Spirit gives you faith to believe what I just said about Jesus, or he won't. If not, there's no hard feelings, though. And I'm not going to try to force you to believe anything else. That is almost it. I think we're ready for UFOs and Bible prophecy now. You think you've got a fair enough handle on the Genesis 6 stuff and on biblical ufology to date? Just to hear what these guys have to say about how it could all pan out possibly in the future. And I will tell you, you're in for a marvelous day. The last thing, just by way of introduction of the speakers, not of me anymore, when I was speaking earlier on how bad the search results appeared for UFOs when I first got on the internet, I did leave out something extremely important. There was, in fact, one shining star already in that dark universe, and that was David Flynn. And his Watcher website has been out there connecting UFOs and the Antichrist for internet searchers long before I ever got involved in this, before I even had a computer or got online. David is, he's a pioneer, he's a trooper. Most of you already know he gives the most mind-blowing presentations that you can watch them over and over again. You still feel like it's new material every time you see it. He's been working on this one since last year's conference. And if Dave's excited about it, it should be pretty awesome to see how he wraps all these thoughts up. I think PowerPoint projectors were invented for David Flynn because he usually brings some very visually stunning material. After him, we got Mike Kaiser. To know him is to love him. What else can you say? He was kind of tucked away studying and teaching theology for about 2 decades before most of us ever heard from him. But there's no doubting he came onto this field of biblical ufology as a walk-on superstar in 2001. Quite frankly, I think he's owned the field ever since. There's at least 20 years of rigorous academic study behind anything that comes out of his mouth. And once you've heard Mike speak or even read his material, you just know, honestly, you have been in the presence of greatness. That's not an exaggeration, as most of you here already know. I'm proud to have him as a regular speaker, founding organizer of this conference. And you know, once you've heard from him, you've heard truth as well. And he is going to break his long-standing silence on eschatology here today. Perhaps share his disappointment, you might even say disdain, at what passes for prophecy in most churches. Mike's laughing. Good. We'll finally get to see the answer to that question. Could Christianity accommodate a genuine Bible prophecy? After lunch, we'll bring up the new guys. Not new to the Lord. They're not new to speaking and teaching on theology of the end times. Just new to this conference. They've not majored in biblical ufology for all their Christian careers, but they've definitely made very, very important contributions, kind of like me. Bill Sneblin, he has a personal story of being on the wrong side for a really large chunk of his life, and he's not going to hold back on telling you about it either, and how he's seen UFOs play into part of the darker occult world. Norm Franz's specialty is really economics, as well as Christianity's Hebraic roots, and even the practice of it today. But I've seen this video where he speaks on UFOs and globalism, and I knew I had to have him here. He's not just brilliant, but he's extremely likable as well, and you're going to see that. By popular request, I'd have to say, I finally got Stan Deo, who, along with his wife Holly, is an avid writer on researcher of end times and disaster preparedness. And he used to work with his own hands on top secret technology that we'd be calling UFOs today. It was so top secret, though, that you couldn't even buy his book in America for a long time. But in a continent of 13 million people, Australia, Stan has owned biblical ufology. He's sold over 100,000 books, and it's been translated into 5 or 6 languages as well. He is really a household word. More people came from Stan Deo's websites to this conference other than mine or the Ancient of Days than anybody else. There's this one problem with Christian end times views. Last thing is, we tend to think of it all as being somewhat distant future time frame. Not really real or important today, but all these guys, what they're doing, Norm and Bill and Stan, like I said, they're bringing you their expertise on these topics. But what you're going to see, as the New Testament says, 1 John and Thessalonians, is the spirit of Antichrist, or the mystery of iniquity, is already at work in the world and is being manifested in some very tangible ways just to move humanity towards this one world system. What they're going to show you is how this Antichrist system is already entrenched in various real-world spheres, and then show you exactly how these areas relate specifically to UFOs. Didn't forget Patrick Dublin, Patrick all the way from Dublin, Ireland. I'd say our wild card player is Patrick Heron. He came to my appearance or my attention on the Coast to Coast radio show this January, and after that appearance, his one book, The Nephilim and the Pyramid of the Apocalypse, it shot to Amazon's entire top 10. And that could be a flash-in-the-pan success, but it is still, 6 months later, the number one selling book on Bible prophecy that Amazon carries, 6 years after that. And I just honestly, I can't say more than that without repeating it, without ruining it for you, but you'll find out tonight why that is. And you're also going to find out about Patrick is he is more fun than all the rest of us put together. I guarantee you that. So that is it. You are really in for a day you're not going to forget. I can say that with confidence. thank you for hanging with me this long. I'm Guy Malone. Welcome to sunny Roswell, New Mexico. Thank you for being here. That's it. Mm-hmm. Thank you.